The UK is set to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda after legal challenges failed. It's a move described by many as inhumane. Will it stop refugees reaching Britain? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Come here and we'll send you to Rwanda. That's the message coming out of the United Kingdom for asylum seekers and migrants trying to reach it illegally. Most of the people who were supposed to be deported were able to avoid the first flight to Kigali through individual legal challenges, a request to halt the flight on grounds the deportations would undermine the dignity of people escaping war and oppression was rejected by the UK's Court of Appeal. Laura Burden Manley reports.
A chorus of anger from protesters outside London's Court of Appeal as a judge gave the green light for the first flight of refugees and migrants to Rwanda. Rights groups say it includes people who had escaped war in Afghanistan and Syria. And being flown more than 6,000 kilometres away will traumatise them further.
They've suffered incredibly. They've seen family members killed. They've had torture themselves. They are tired, they're at the end of their tether, they're finding detention incredibly traumatising, and the thought of a further deportation halfway across the road is absolutely terrifying for them.
UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson says a deportation strategy will undermine people smuggling networks and deter refugees from making dangerous journeys to Britain. The United Nations Refugee Agency hit back, saying Rwanda's human rights record is under scrutiny and the UK is shirking responsibility.
This is all wrong. This is all wrong, this deal. You know, it is the foundation of the right to asylum that people that are on a country's territory, especially a country that is a signatory to the convention and has the institutions to deal with that.
In April, Home Secretary Priti Patel visited Kigali to finalise the project and potentially send tens of thousands of people there. The deal includes a payment of about $150 million to the Rwandan government. So far this year, 10,000 migrants and refugees made the crossing from mainland Europe to the UK, and 28,000 last year. In November, 27 people drowned when their dinghy deflated, and many more have had to be rescued from the Channel's busy shipping lanes. Some of those who risked their lives will leave on the first flight on Tuesday, but there may not be many on it. A series of individual legal challenges mean only a few of the 130 people notified will leave. And the government continues to face pressure from activists, rights groups and unions who insist the move is unlawful. Laura Burden Manley, Al Jazeera.
All right, let's go ahead and bring in our guests in London. Claire Mosley is founder of Care for Calais, an organization campaigning against the deportation. In Kigali, Joseph Rayarasa is executive secretary of Never Again, a social justice and peacebuilding organization in Rwanda. And in Brussels, Catherine Woolard is secretary general of the European Council on Refugees and Exiles. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks for joining us. But first, we're going to talk to Shabia Mantu, a UNHCR spokesperson. She joins us from Geneva. Shabia, thanks so much for joining us today. I want to ask you first about some of the remarks that were made by Filippo Grandi, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. He said that the precedent that this creates is catastrophic. So let me ask you, what kind of precedent does this plan between the UK and Rwanda set?
Well, indeed, this sets a very worrying precedent. We've pronounced ourselves repeatedly on this issue. These types of arrangements, they undermine the whole principle of refugee protection, of responsibility sharing. We're living in a world today where it's actually the countries that are some of the most under-resourced. They are, in fact, already the ones that are taking on the disproportionate load of refugee responsibility. So they're, in fact, before the current situation with the Ukraine war and the refugee displacement that we've seen from that particular situation. Countries in the global south hosted about 85% of the world's refugees. Now, these countries are fulfilling their obligations. They're protecting refugees. When you have countries that are more well-resourced and that have the capacities to process asylum claims and to receive refugees, if they are shirking their obligations, what kind of message does that send to the other countries that are doing their bit? So it's worrying from a legal perspective, but also from an ethical and a moral perspective as well.
Shabia, let me also ask you about the fact that, you know, the fact that there is so much concern about this plan. Does this plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda to be processed, does that not contradict the UK's obligations as a signatory to the International Refugee Convention? And furthermore, what are the concerns specifically about Rwanda's ability to host and process these asylum seekers?
Well, indeed, we've said that these arrangements that seek to transfer refugees and asylum seekers to other countries in the absence of sufficient safeguards and standards, they really what they do is they shift responsibilities for asylum. They evade international obligations, and they are contrary to the spirit and the letter of the Refugee Convention. So in our view, they are contrary to the law and to the responsibilities that need to be met. But refugees, at the end of the day, they're not commodities. These are human beings. They're human lives. They shouldn't have to be transferred to other countries. These are people who have international, they're afforded international protection if they are determined to be refugees. They need to be protected. Some of them have fled very traumatic experiences and circumstances. No one voluntarily chooses to become a refugee. So they should not be shipped off against their will and treated like they can be traded. I mean, these are human beings we're talking about at the end of the day.
Shabia, the UNHCR also says this plan is an effort to export the country's legal obligations to provide asylum to those seeking a safe haven. Tell us about some of the other concerns that you and your colleagues have about offshoring.
Well, that's what these arrangements are. They're basically outsourcing international legal responsibilities to other countries. And they go against the spirit and the letter of the law, as we've mentioned. So we need a more humane and compassionate approach in terms of dealing with this issue. We're talking about a very limited number of movements. And also these are... There's an appropriate recourse. There's a way to deal with refugee movements. Now, when you have a fair and efficient asylum process that can determine who is in need of international protection, so who is a refugee and who isn't, that's a very manageable way of addressing this issue. And it's also about preventing the resort of refugees as well to dangerous and risky journeys. These models have been touted as a deterrent, but this is not really what is going to be the result of these arrangements. We're undermining legal obligations, mm-hmm. but also placing refugees at risk. And at the same time, mm-hmm. you're going to force people to take even more dangerous and risky journeys to safety in the absence of those pathways to safety.
All right, Shabia Mantu, spokesperson for the UN Refugee Agency. Thanks so much for joining us on Inside Story. Claire, let me turn to you now. I just want to take a step back for a moment and talk about the human beings who are being impacted by all of this. You know, many of these refugees, migrants, asylum seekers, they were already severely traumatized. So as somebody who works directly with them, how scared are these refugees and migrants who are facing the possibility that they might now get sent to Rwanda?
Well, we've been talking to them for the last couple of weeks, and it would be impossible really to understate how scared and traumatized they are by this. As you say, these people are victims of the worst things that happen around the world. Five of them are victims of trafficking or torture. They've all suffered horrible things. They've seen their families killed. They have been traumatized themselves by conflicts and torture. They have the most horrible physical and mental scars. One of them has been diagnosed with PTSD. And just being in detention has been highly traumatic for them. Some of them being in detention reminds them of other times when they have been locked away and tortured. They are terrified of being sent to Rwanda. They're terrified of the repercussions for themselves, and they're terrified of what's going to happen to their families. Two of them are married. Two of them have family members in the UK that they now feel like they will be abandoning. None of them are from Africa. So for them, it represents being sent to another continent that they have no connection to. We heard evidence in court that there's no certainty that people from the Middle East will get a fair hearing for their asylum claims in Rwanda. So for them, it's just incredibly traumatic. And we're talking about people, like I say, who already have extreme physical and mental scars from their previous experiences. So this plan is absolutely brutal. What we're going to put these people through, it can't be taken back. In court, they said, if in the future it's found that this plan is unlawful, well, we'll just bring them back. But we can't take back the horror and the brutality of what we're doing to them as human beings. We can't just say sorry for that. You know, it's impossible to fix that hurt and that harm.
Catherine, there have been many British officials who have stated on numerous occasions that offshoring refugees does not, in their opinion, contravene the UN Refugee Convention. But there are many rights activists and advocates out there who say that is simply not the case. From your vantage point, is this action by the UK a contravention of international law?
We would say it certainly is. And in saying that, we are in agreement with UNHCR, which is the authority on the interpretation of the Refugee Convention that is the basis of international refugee law. I would highlight two elements, two articles of the convention. Article 33, which is the prohibition of refoulement, to send people back to a place where their lives are at risk. It may be the case that given that Rwanda's asylum system is embryonic, as UNHCR has analysed, that people don't get protection and then are sent back to countries where they're at risk. There's also Article 31, which prohibits states that are signatories to the convention from discriminating against people on the basis of the manner of their arrival. So this policy in general in the UK, many elements of the new Borders Act, but also this particular deal appears to contravene that part of international refugee law, which says that people shouldn't be treated differently according to how they arrive. And it's not illegal to cross borders to seek protection. We would underline that a large majority of those arriving in the UK having crossed the channel are found to be in need of international protection. So it's a group of people, many of whom refugees, in need of international protection and who shouldn't be penalised for the way that they've been forced to arrive in the UK.
Joseph, as Catherine just mentioned, the UNHCR has said that Rwanda does not have the capacity to process these asylum claims and that there is a risk that some migrants could be returned to countries from which they fled. What's your response to that?
Yeah, no, thanks a lot. I think it depends on which criteria the UNHCR is based on making that analysis. But what I can say, for the last 20 years, Rwanda has been receiving refugees, and Rwanda came up when Africans from North Africa were being mistreated when they were trying to cross the Mediterranean Ocean. So I would say that Rwanda has the capacity to process the refugee asylum.
Catherine, let me get back to you about one of the points that Joseph was making. He was saying that Rwanda is able to do this. You know, many officials in Rwanda have said that it is a safe country, that they are welcoming to refugees and migrants. From your point of view, I mean, you stated earlier that essentially, it's embryonic as far as their being able to process this many asylum seekers. Do you think that they will be able to get to the point where they can process this? And also, why was Rwanda selected?
So I think there's a number of different factors to mention. First of all, we would defer to UNHCR in its assessment of the asylum system in Rwanda. In terms of the situation in Rwanda more generally, we note that even the UK government itself has noted in some of its reports that there are questions about the respect for human rights in Rwanda. So that is something that also should be taken into account. And The reason a country enters into this kind of deal is for the benefits that they receive. And there's been a lot of publicity about the amount of money that will be provided to Rwanda. And it's also a country with a leader who likes to act as a provocateur in many senses and to go against the grain. And so that may be one of the reasons why this country in particular has decided to enter into a deal when so many other countries refuse to do so because they don't want to take on the responsibilities of a country like the UK, which has its international obligations and both has the means and the obligations to be offering protection to the small number of displaced people that actually arrive there in the UK. So I think that's part of it. These kind of agreements, as well as the money, they also give a certain political leverage because it creates dependency on the country that's hosting people. So we see that, for instance, in the arrangements between the EU and Turkey, which we also condemn, that gives political leverage to, in that case, a political leader who is able to put pressure on Europe and extract concessions because of hosting, in that case, far greater number of people. So those are the kind of factors that are involved. Mm. And I would underline that as well as the human rights considerations, one of the objections to the deal is the cost. It looks massively expensive, which is what's also been learnt from the use of this kind of model in Australia.
Claire, let me ask you about what legal avenues are left right now when it comes to challenging this plan. As I understand it, there is going to be a judicial review in the next month with regard to this new policy. If the opinion of the next judicial review were to be that this policy is flawed or if it is not illegal, would those who may have been transferred already to Rwanda be eligible to come back to the UK?
Yes, the important hearing is the one in July, which is when the court will look at whether the policy is in fact lawful. And if the court decides it isn't, then yes, we can bring them back. But the extreme damage that will have been done is incredibly concerning. A lot of the people say to us, if they're sent to Rwanda, they will kill themselves. I really don't know where that would leave us. And the damage that will be done to the individuals by the deportation and to their families, that's not something that we can ever take back, is it? And it's very hard for us to understand why our government is going down this route when there are other things that we could do that would be much more humane and, I would say, much more effective. If we gave visas to people in Calais and other refugees, same as we do to Ukrainians, then that would put people smugglers out of business and that would stop people risking their lives in the channel. So we find it incredibly difficult to understand why the British government would go down a route that is so incredibly brutal and dangerous and cruel to refugees when there's other options that are available that would probably be more effective as well as more humane.
Joseph, I'll let you finish the point that you were making earlier, but I also want to ask you about the fact, you know, Rwandan officials have said the country has a proud history of welcoming those in need and that Rwanda is already home to more than 130,000 refugees and migrants from other African nations and other countries as well. You know, but there are a lot of activists and refugee advocates out there say that the refugees and migrants who sought better lives in Britain are expected to find fewer chances to pursue their dreams in Rwanda. What would you say to that?
I think so. As I was saying previously, is that Rwanda has the capacity, and as you've mentioned, they have around more than 130,000 refugees. So the country has been taking care of these refugees. So I think Rwanda has the capacity as a country. So coming back to what you're saying, I think there is some, I'm very sorry, but I think there's some bias from the north where people think that countries in the global south don't have, maybe we are still in the dark, or maybe there is no functioning systems. But I can be able to say that I think Rwanda is safe. Rwanda has it has created opportunities. Given its history, it has created opportunities to each and every person, irrespective of his background or her background. So I think what the other activists from the global north are saying. It's just a bias that they have maybe on Africa or other countries in the global south. But I would say that Rwanda has the opportunities. Rwanda has put in place systems to be able to support the process and also to make this clear. I think UK as a government has the right to get into any partnership with a country which they think they can facilitate the UK government to process the asylum seekers. So bringing these immigrants to Rwanda, it doesn't mean that the process has ended. The process will continue. So it's a transit. So I think that people shouldn't create mountains out of this.
Mm. Catherine, how concerned are you about the possibility that a refugee who faces a real risk of persecution could be refused asylum in Rwanda? And then what would happen to them?
So according to the memorandum of understanding that is the basis of this agreement, and we should note that this is also one of the problems here, it's not an international agreement. It's in the form of a memorandum of understanding, an informal, flimsy kind of accord, agreement between the UK and Rwanda, which also makes it more difficult to challenge legally. And so in that memorandum of understanding, there are points that mention that Rwanda will be able to send people onwards, so people who do not receive a positive decision after an asylum process in Rwanda may be sent back to their own countries or to other countries. So there's the risk, of course, of refoulement, that they would be sent back to their countries where they face persecution. As I said earlier, the vast majority of those arriving currently in the UK across the channel are people in need of international protection, according to the UK courts. So there is a strong risk there that if somebody gets a negative decision in an asylum system, which is under construction, let's say, that they're sent and refouled. And the other question is this part of the agreement that potentially allows them to be sent somewhere else. So is there a risk that they're then sent to another country that's cooperating with Rwanda, and where they may also face other issues? But I think it's not a question of what our assessment is of Rwanda. As I said, we defer to UNHCR on that. Mm. I think it's also about the fact that the UK has international obligations and responsibilities, and it is undermining international refugee law, but international law more generally, by entering this kind of agreement. So it encourages other countries in the rich world to undermine international law and to attempt to circumvent their own obligations.
Mm-hmm. Claire, we just have about a minute left. Just briefly, you know, Boris Johnson says that this is going to break the business model of criminal gangs. Let me ask you first, do you think that's the case? And is this something that's actually going to deter migration? Because people are still getting on boats. People are still risking their lives.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it's pretty clear that it's not going to. As you say, people are still crossing. And the British government has tried a number of policies that are focused on deterrence, and none of them have had any effect at all. So even though this is more brutal than any other, it is in effect still a deterrence policy. So why should this succeed when any others have failed? Mm. And as I say, there are other ways. Why, if the government was so sure that they want to beat people smugglers, why won't they try something else? Why won't they try something new? If that's really the aim, there are other ways to do it that would be more effective and more humane.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the discussion there. Thanks so much to all of our guests, Claire Mosley, Joseph Raya-Rasa, and Catherine Woolard. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.